Chapter 4. Perfecting the Edges. The importance of these sudden movements kept Zachnephane practicing them over and over, 100 times a day, every day. They were so simple, usually, and straightforward, and the gains in speed on the second turn so minuscule that many fighters paid only cursory attention. But Zachnephane knew better. The fights sung by the bards were almost always drawn-out affairs, with great leaping pirouettes and counters to counters to counters. But the truth of staying alive was simpler, though perhaps unworthy of long verse. Most fights were won or lost on the draw. So he practiced. He sent a small disc of a carved mushroom stalk spinning up in the air before him, relaxing himself fully as it lifted, closing his eyes until he heard the random flip hit the floor in front of him. He opened his eyes, he looked, he found the image facing up on the disc, the left hand, so he moved suddenly, hands across his belly to grab the hilts of his swords at his hips, right forearm over left. It had to be that way to defeat the incoming attacker as identified by the coin, and focus on countering her first, not the associate to the left. Out came the swords in an eye blink, rising and cutting across in a double backhand parry. He turned his right wrist as that sword came across, bringing it vertical in its sweep, then shortening the cut while the left went across perfectly horizontally, with full follow-through and even a step with the left foot in that direction. That left slash was designed to fend off any associates on the attack. The right was a shortened parry to deflect the thrusting attack aside and lead into a sudden reversal and thrust designed to kill. To kill on the draw. To be done with the fight before it had even really begun. 3 times did Zachnephane practice that draw, double parry and thrust, right hand over left, then 3 times in reverse, left hand over right, left sword backing, shortening, and thrusting straight ahead. Weapon sheathed, he retrieved the mushroom disc, shook out his neck and shoulders, and sent it spinning once more. Then again, after 6 more draws, basic movements, draws Zachnephane had executed thousands of times in his life. From there he went to a series of same hand, same hip draws, where he brought forth the sword on his left hip with his left hand, right hand for the right. This was typically a reverse draw technique, reversing the hand over the hilt, drawing and executing a flip of the blades as the elbows rolled under, creating a reverse pincer movement with the swords, crossing in the middle between the extending arms and cutting outward in a short and swift sweep. This movement was far more awkward than the first, but with repetition, endless repetition. The muscles could be trained to safely begin the turn of the blades as soon as the sword tips exited the scabbards. Zachnephane had perfected 3 different executions of this technique, 2 to mirror the more usual cross-hand draw, 1 following through to the left and 1 to the right, but without the steps. And if he was facing but 1 opponent, he would double parry with the reverse sweeps, shorten both, and thrust ahead with both following the sudden stop. He had become so skilled with this that he could even alter the angle of attack with those thrusts, every combination of putting the blades ahead too high, too low, or 1 each way alternatingly. Few drow warriors would attempt this type of draw in a real fight. It was too easy to hook a tip in the scabbard or simply be too slow to defeat an attack by the time a parrying blade was on its way. Zachnephane, though, could execute it as smoothly as the more typical cross-hand draw, and he found the looks on the faces of his would-be killers quite amusing when he immediately defeated them in this manner. He could almost hear them asking, "How?" before falling over dead. The blades came forth several times, spinning, parrying, thrusting, then snapping back into their respective scabbards. Satisfied, Zachnephane nodded, wiped his sweating hands on a nearby towel, and took a deep and steadying breath. Now came the same hand, same hip draw, simply grabbing the hilts and lifting his arms up, drawing the swords fully downward for a double vertical block, tips facing the floor. In this routine, that draw was a first move, only a first move, and after the block was initiated, one or both of the swords had to be moving quickly to a more normal, comfortable, and usable grip. This was where Zacnafane could separate himself from almost all others in the opening moments of a fight. Drawing his swords in this manner was the fastest and cleanest extraction from the scabbards. There was no reversal of momentum, and so could be effective in the very last eye blink to defeat an incoming thrust or cut. This was also the hardest to improvise, the most limited in second movements, with both swords in a reversed grip. Zacnafane had envisioned many ways to change that, though of course it was always easier to see it in his mind than to actually execute such a maneuver. 1,000 times 1,000, he whispered to himself as he repeatedly tried his newest continuation of the draw. That was his mantra, 1,000 times 1,000, reminding him that repetition trained muscles and that there was no shortcut or substitute. 1,000 times 1,000, he said when he lost control of his left-hand blade and it went flying out before him. Undaunted, he gathered up the sword and replaced it in its scabbard, then took a deep breath and drew again both swords. With the right, he let go ever so slightly as it rose and came free, letting the weight of the blade drop it to be recaught with the same reversed grip, but now with his arms slicing down and back. That was the easy part. When he drew his left hand, he grabbed the hilt only with his pointer and middle fingers wrapping above, his ring finger and little finger going back against the hilt nearer the crosspiece. Up went the blade, and as it did, Zacnafane let go with his thumb and pressed with his lower two fingers, redirecting the momentum of the lift to send the blade spinning under and then up and over and turning tip down as he brought his hand back down behind his shoulder. The sword blade began to sweep across to Zacnafane's right, even as it stabbed downward, intending to parry an attack from the rear. To an onlooker, it was a beautiful and swift movement, but Zacnafane growled in frustration, stopped short his final movements, and let the blade fly from his grasp out to the right and clank down to the floor. He had not re-established a strong enough grip on the sword to block the cut of a child, and that with three more movements necessary to complete the counter-strike routine. Again. Jarlaxle and young Dineen Doerden came in sight of Zacnafane, with the weapon master's back to them as he went through his practice routines in the house training room. His left arm up high, his sword swung through, tipped down across his back, and kept going up and around before him. His right-hand blade thrust backwards suddenly, right behind the passing left-hand blade. Jarlaxle held Dineen back and silent as he watched the weapon master finish, with Zacnafane tossing his left-hand blade to reverse his grip and back thrust similarly as he retracted the right, then executing a rather awkward turn, coming around with a look of frustration clear on his face. He noticed the visitors and stood up straight immediately. "What are you doing here?" "I came with business for Matron Malice," Jarlaxle answered truthfully, "and decided to see how my friend fared in what might be the last days of his life." That brought a smirk to Zacnafane's face. "Begone, whelp," he told Dineen. The young man, the younger son of Malice, straightened and sucked in his breath, obviously taking offense. Zacnafane laughed at him. Jarlaxle put his arm about the young Doerden's shoulders. "It is never wise to show your anger to he who made you angry," he whispered into Dineen's ear, "and less so still to do it when that person could cut you into pieces before that scowl even left your face." "Matron Malice told me to escort you," Dineen argued, "and so you have." "I'll not leave you free rein of the house, rogue," Dineen said. Jarlaxle slightly bowed, and he did respect the young one's courage, though he figured it would get Dineen killed. "Wait for me in the hall, then," he offered. "I would speak with my friend alone." "Get out," Zacnafane added from over at the side wall, where he had collected a dry towel to wipe away his sweat. Dineen moved back through the door, but didn't close it. "How many imaginary foes did you just slay?" Jarlaxle asked, moving to his friend. "None. I fear he is still alive." Jarlaxle considered the movements he had seen. "Then you are dead," he reasoned. "Sadly." practicing your draw and strike techniques? Zachnefane nodded and wiped the towel over his face. You understand that you will both begin your fight with your blades in hand? Jarlaxle asked. So? You will not need to draw. And? Do not be so obtuse. Why are you practicing something you will not need? I need it often. Jarlaxle started to sigh, but Zachnefane quickly continued. Not in the fight 2 days hence, no. But do you really expect me to surrender my days of practice for the likes of Duvan Trayrock? Should I also practice my running in case I am assailed by a sewer rat on my way to your play? My play? You should have simply let me kill him in the tavern then and there. He is a weapon master of a powerful and long-standing house, Jarlaxle reminded. What consequence for House Doerden if you had done that? The same as after I kill him in the arranged battle, Zachnefane replied without hesitation. Not so, Jarlaxle answered, though he really wasn't sure what practical difference it might make. Either way, Duvan or Avanvesa seemed to be freelancing here, so his death at Zachnefane's hands, whether in a bar fight or an alley fight, could bring some troubling questions Matron Malice's way. You do not have to kill him, Jarlaxle added. Says the man who is not Duvan's target. He came to find me. He moved in order to incite an excuse to kill me, not you. Jarlaxle had no reply to that. Instead, he said, You would be dead, you know, motioning his chin back toward the center of the room, where Zachnefane had been working on his drawing techniques. The turn was awkward and too removed from the draw. Anything more than a second move is folly. Zachnefane dryly replied, reciting the mantra of Mele Magver regarding that most important beginning sequence of any close combat. The draw and a single follow with a rule of thumb. Draw and strike, nothing more, then go to an even posture with your attacker who previously held the initiative. I counted a third and fourth, though that one failed. You are well beyond what is considered proper. The block over your shoulder as it was brilliantly done, and the backward thrust would buy you time to disengage and come up square against whomever it was that tried to kill you. Why try to go beyond that when you were at such a disadvantage? You would have me play the counter to even? That is how you were taught. By warriors who would fall to me, Zachnefane said. Jarlaxle conceded the point with a helpless laugh. Why are you here? Zachnefane asked. I told you. You told me you had business with Matron Malice. Why are you here in this room? To greet an old friend? Zachnefane crossed his arms over his chest. Jarlaxle glanced back at the open door, then moved closer so that the eavesdropping young Deneen wouldn't see, and signed with his hand, Do you need me to facilitate your release from House Doerden on the night of the fight? Only if you can do so without implicating yourself in that release, Zachnefane signed back. Jarlaxle smiled too wryly. Zachnefane didn't bother to ask. Soon after he left House Doerden, before he had even returned to the Claw Rift, Jarlaxle was met by a Brigandiaerth courier who handed him a scroll. Curious. After a magical examination to ensure that it was not trapped, he unrolled it to find a betting ledger on the upcoming fight, with a note from Arathis Hune informing him that all the seed money had already been claimed in wager. Jarlaxle rolled the parchment and considered it. In less than half a day, all the bets on Zachnefane had been covered. Trayrocks, he first figured. Dabne and Harbinder were not the only survivors of that house circulating within Jarlaxle's orbit. Certainly, they all knew the true identity of Zachnefane's assailant, and so would quietly cheer for Duvan to get revenge for what Zachnefane had done to their house that century before. But would they bet on Duvan? They knew Duvan best, and so knew Duvan's limitations. Wanting someone to win and betting on that outcome were two very different things, after all. Tell him to seed half again more gold today and another full amount tomorrow, Jarlaxle instructed the young courier. similar amounts regarded to each combatant. The young man nodded and sprinted away. Jarlaxle considered the parchment again, even opened it to see if the amounts of each bet listed could give him some clue as to who was thinking that Duvon, Avanvesa Fay Branch, would win. His first certainty, of course, was that someone expected that she could influence the bout. In the first encounter, Zacnaphane had battled some poison as well as Duvon, Jarlaxle was positive. So who would be able to do so again? Or did any of these people actually believe that Duvon could defeat Zacnaphane? Certainly Duvon would be superbly outfitted, and likely bolstered by magical enhancements to his body as well, but no matter how much they enhanced Duvon, could they hope it enough? Would they also try to wound Zacnaphane, poison again, magic? He would be guarded against all of that, of course. Unless, a hint of a smile. He would not laugh aloud when he suspected, as he always suspected, that spying eyes were upon him, creased Jarlaxle's lips as he considered someone else who might be very glad to see the fall of Zacnaphane Doerden, and the unorthodox methods that might be available to that person to see that it was carried out. Jarlaxle veered in his course, moving instead for the raised alcove of the great cavern known as Tir Bresh, which housed the famed Academy of Menzo Berenzon. The sword came around over his right shoulder, rising as he swept it before him. He let go simply to reverse his grip and began his backward thrust as he turned. Zacnaphane stopped and snarled. It was too awkward. The masters at Melee MacVair had always taught the one-move mantra. In a sudden encounter, you had one move following a draw to make your attack, just one. After that, revert to a fighting stance and begin the formal combat. The weapon master shook his head. He was so close here, not just to the second move, but the third and fourth as well, and with all of them stealing from his attacker any choice except retreat, and leaving that assailant vulnerable if she wasn't smart enough to immediately flee. Too close. But the balance was all wrong. He could get his left-hand blade around, could reverse and thrust, but that would accomplish nothing more than the initial thrust. It was a delaying tactic designed to hold the fight static for one more eye blink, one more turn. He could not execute that turn successfully. It didn't work. Zacnaphane pondered the sword movements and his footwork. Perhaps if he added a step to the left. It is a ridiculous proposition, even for you, Archmage Gromph Banry answered Jarlaxle. The two sat in comfortable chairs before a blazing hearth in the chambers of the Great Wizard, an extra-dimensional mansion accessed through a secret closet in Gromp's mundane quarters in Sorcerre, the Drow School for Wizards. But it can be done? Gromp sighed and sipped the fine, the very fine liquor Jarlaxle had brought to him, the price Gromp demanded for any and every visit from the mercenary leader. Anything can be done, he replied. Not everything should be done. Why should this not be done? It seems a rather minor Dreamer and of little consequence. Because it is not worth the trouble. It is simply a variation of a minor spell, Jarlaxle protested. Then do it yourself. It was Jarlaxle's turn to sigh. Why would I not ask the greatest mage in the city? Should I then ask Jarlaxle when I need a rat exterminated? If it is an extraordinary rat, I suppose, Jarlaxle replied, then slyly added, or even a mundane one, if you were willing to pay Jarlaxle's fee. Gromp snorted. Tell me why, then. Because too many matrons know the properties from eye to eye.
The Oblodrons, you mean, Gromph reasoned. You continue to deal with those strange creatures?
They live in my attic, one might say.
Then hire a rat killer and be rid of them.
Jarlaxle arched his eyebrow at that remark, and Gromph shrugged and took another drink, revealing his frustration, Jarlaxle knew, for even the mighty Gromph was unnerved by the foreign powers of Matron Kjorl Odrin and her psionic clan.
a spell wouldn't be of much use to you because of the time constraints. So you would have to cast it, and it would be no minor thing, as you claim. Unless, of course, you wish it to be permanent, and I warn you. Oh no, not permanent, Jarlaxle interrupted. Just a short duration. An alchemist would be a better choice than a wizard, Gromph explained. You have heard of daylight oil? Of course. In fact, Jarlaxle had used daylight oil, coating the small stones encased in ceramic balls, to break up the fight in the using myconid. Something akin to that, I believe, Gromph said. A temporary Dwyamer once applied, one that sets in place upon the item, and does not bleed onto anything it touches. Not as simple as you might think, but probably possible. I have fine alchemists, Jarlaxle remarked. And I have finer ones, Gromph said, but more expensive ones. You are paying my fee either way, rogue, the archmage said. It was my idea. Jarlaxle nodded and tipped his glass toward Gromph. When? When do you need it? 2 days. Double the fee. Jarlaxle started to argue, but bit it back and nodded. He thought to offer Gromph the usual fee and tell the archmage how he could easily double it himself, but then deferred, not really wanting to involve any Bayenries in this little fight he had arranged. Perhaps he would just bet that fee additionally himself. Either way, it didn't matter. He would gain a useful item, salvage a useful ally, and make plenty of gold in the process.